free speech to free minds. It's the David Knight Show.
Welcome on this Thursday, February the 14th, 2019, Valentine's Day. You know, the crew was asking me what to call the show today, what to title it. And I said, you know, I've got so many different topics, I don't even know what to go with. You know, we pick one topic and we put that as the show title for people on the internet. It's kind of limiting because today we've got a wide variety of topics. We're not going to focus on just one thing. I mean, some days I get very heavily into something's dominating the news. Today, there are a lot of very important topics. Give you an example. I mean, today is the one-year anniversary of the shooting at Parkland High School, Stoneman Douglas High School. And there has been, over the last year, a rash of gun prohibition that's out there. We're going to talk about some of that. We're going to talk about ripping babies from their parents. You know, we have Kamala Harris saying, don't you dare rip those children from their parents at the border. Well, first of all, we don't know if they're their parents. We have to do some due diligence. They could be kids who are being child trafficked. They could have been kidnapped, whatever. So we have to know that they are their parents, number one. Number two, they're endangering these children if they are their parents. They're violating our laws and so forth. But they don't care about actually ripping babies from their parents and ripping the babies to pieces. So we're going to talk about what is happening in terms of the radical left. That's another big movement that's going on right now. We're going to talk about not only gun prohibition, but meat prohibition. We've got Cory Booker, soy boy Cory. Or we could call him Tofurky Booker instead of Cory Booker. I don't know. He's out there pushing meat prohibition. And then on the other side, you've got the big beef industry saying, well, we don't want to have any plant-based meat substitutes. We're going to outlaw that. It's like, hey, come on, guys. Let's just let people decide. You know, we talk about abortion. Everybody says, oh, I'm pro-choice. No, you're not. You're not pro-choice about anything. Very few people are anymore. And everybody wants to dictate what the other people do. Look, if Cory Booker wants to be a vegan, more power to him. Good for him. You shouldn't force that on other people. And if other people want to be vegan or if they want to have soy meat substitutes or whatever, we shouldn't allow big agriculture to ban that. Let people decide. That's why I'm pro-choice on vaccines. Let people decide. There's a risk there. We'd like to think that we live in this simplified digital world where everything is a one or a zero. It's totally safe or it is totally bad. Well, the world doesn't work like that. It works on a sliding scale. We live in an analog world. And when you look at something that you don't like, this is something I remember, you don't hear this anymore, but when I was a kid, you used to hear two things. Well, we live in a free country, you know, do what you want. No, you don't hear that anymore. Nobody says that anymore. Nobody wants that anymore, as a matter of fact. We used to complain about it. If somebody was complaining too much about something, we would say, don't make a federal case out of it. Well, everything is made a federal case out of today. We don't live in a free country. If you don't like something, you want to prohibit it at the federal level. If you like it, you want to subsidize it and force it on people at the federal level. Everything is being centralized, whether we go with the Green New Deal or not. Let's face it, folks. Our lives have been put under centralized control. And we're going to also talk about the TSA, John Bolton's plan to starve Venezuelans into submission, the Democrat Party's plan to starve Americans into submission. Eric Peters is going to be joining us to talk about transportation and freedom. We have Valentine's being sent, real collusion. If people want to look at this, we got real collusion that's going on with the Democrats. We've got Bloomberg saying he's going to spend $500 million, $500 million to defeat President Trump, whether or not he runs himself for president. Isn't that collusion of some sort? Of course, the Democrats don't care about that kind of wealth privilege, do they? We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Deceit, Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
Welcome on this February 14th, Valentine's Day, 2019. Today we're going to talk about government intervention into our lives. You know, the Democrats like to say they're pro-choice. No, they're not. They want you to kill your babies, but they're not pro-choice about anything. We're going to talk about life and liberty today. You know, it was Thomas Jefferson who said, "The hand of force can destroy but cannot disjoin them, life and liberty." Well, you can't separate them, folks, but the government, which is nothing but force, as Washington said, it's not persuasion, it's not eloquence, it's not compassion. Government is force. It's like the fire. And so, you know, you can destroy life, you can destroy liberty, but you can't separate them. And, of course, if you want to destroy them, use the hand of force, use government to do that. So we've got gun prohibition, we got meat prohibition, we got abortion, we got Twitter out there slamming people. Like I've said many times, Twitter and Facebook are not social media. Google is not a search engine. I've got more data points on that today. But yeah, today is the also, besides being Valentine's Day, it's also the 1 year anniversary of the shooting at in Florida that made David Hogg a celebrity. We're going to revisit that. We're going to talk about building a wall around Congress. Let's President Trump may be getting the finances together to go around Congress and to wall in their prohibitions of protecting America. That's right. It is an existential threat. We also have Eric Peters going to be joining us today to talk about mobility and freedom. But let's start with meat prohibition. Well, actually, let's start with something else, even more personal. You know, for the last several days, I have had government intervention hit me in the face every morning like a blast of cold water into my personal private life, right there in my shower. I've got a hot water heater that's not working because of government intervention in my life. They have mandated these high temperature cutoff valves. 5 years ago when we bought this house, we had a hot water heater that worked fine for the first couple of months until it got hot. And the hot water heater is up in the attic, and it started cutting off with a high temperature valve. Well, you know, it was still under warranty. So after several visits every couple of days from a plumber, as they would replace one part at a time under warranty, finally we got a plumber who said, you know, this thing is cutting off because of this high temperature valve here, and it's getting, it senses that with the ambient temperature. And it's cutting it off. And so we figured out how to turn that thing off. And we didn't have a problem with it until this last weekend. My wife had an operation. I've been sick. We forgot to check the gas. And with it being very cold here, we ran out of gas. And then when the guys came out and started this thing up, that wouldn't start back up and work right again. So we've gone through this whole song and dance with these people again because government has to make everything so incredibly complicated. We can't even boil water in our homes without government intervention into our lives. It's the simplest thing in the world. You apply a fire to a container of water, but government has basically, government regulation has basically taken us back into the pre-Stone Age. It's like Rand Paul was talking about toilets that won't flush anymore because they've got the mandate of 1.6 gallons. And so if you've got anything other than number one, you can do two or three flushes to make it work. I mean, this is the real, this is why I say, you may not be interested in government, but government is interested in you. And they're going to micromanage every aspect of your life and make it a living hell. We're going to be talking about what's going on in the big cities as well. There's a great article from Michael Snyder, who's been a frequent guest here, a writer for InfoWars many times. We've covered a lot of his articles. Drudge has picked it up. Rats, public defecation, and open drug use. Our major Western cities are becoming uninhabitable. Well, yeah, it's, the UN calls it the 2030 Agenda for Sustainability. And they want to pack everybody into these horrible cities. They'll be even more horrible than what you see in L.A. and San Francisco and other places that he features in his article. And we'll talk about that article coming up a little bit, some of the data points you won't believe. But I say, you know, as they're using this UN 2030 agenda, and that's what's behind all this type of stuff that we're going to be talking to Eric Peters about later in the show. As they start forcing all this stuff on us, saying, we don't want you commuting out into the suburbs. You know, that's urban sprawl to have suburbs. So we don't want your private cars. We don't want you living in the suburbs. We want you in the cities where we can control you, where we can track your every movement, where we can tax your every movement, where we can provide the transportation, and where you can live in a micro apartment that keeps getting smaller and smaller as it gets more and more expensive because everybody being packed into the cities. You know, I had somebody respond to one of the comments I was talking about in terms of congestion charges on Twitter. And I said, well, we've got them in London. I think it's great. It's made the city more livable. It's like, really? You really think that? Do you realize what's going to happen as everybody starts clamoring for a place to live in those cities? Because you've got to work in those. That's what's happening in France. That's why you have the yellow vest. The people that are there say, we have to work in the cities, but we can't afford to live in the cities. It's already happening that way in San Francisco. People can't afford to live there. Because we have this, you know, these billionaires who are living there. So as you put congestion charges on people and you say, well, I don't like your choice in cars. I don't like the fact that you're driving a diesel car. I don't like the fact that you're driving a gasoline car. I don't like the fact that you're driving a hybrid car because it's still got a gasoline or diesel engine in there to make it practical. We're going to make you drive an electric car. If you drive anything other than an electric car, we're going to put congestion charges on. We're going to call these things ultra-low emission zones. That's what they do in London already. It's already happening there. People who say that, occasional Cortex come out and say, I didn't say I was going to get rid of all cars. That's a GOP dirty trick. Well, she had already lied that very same day. In the morning, she said to NPR, when Bob Inskeep, I think, was the guy interviewing her, said, it's going to call for massive government intervention in it. Oh, yeah, it will. Yeah, it will. Then later in the day, she goes to MSNBC. They say, it's going to call for massive government intervention in it. No, I didn't ever say that. That's the GOP. That's a dirty trick. Well, you know, to say that we're not going to outlaw all airplanes that use internal combustion engines, or they're going to outlaw all cars except for electric cars. Oh, I never said that. That's a GOP dirty trick. No, it's already happening throughout Europe. Sadiq Khan has created these ultra-low emission zones, and then they keep getting bigger and bigger. It's like a metastasizing tumor of anti-freedom. This little bubble of authoritarianism keeps getting bigger and bigger, like a tumor. And they've got cities throughout Germany saying, we're going to ban any kind of internal combustion engines, to the extent that BMW has actually said, look, you know, because they can't move quickly enough to make electric cars to satisfy the bureaucrats. They said, if you will buy our regular cars today, our ordinary cars today, our internal combustion engine cars, we will guarantee that if they ban these things in the future, we will give you full credit for it towards an electric car in the future. That's what they have to do to survive right now. BMW is doing that right now because this is a thing in Germany. And it's a thing in France. And it's a thing in the UK. And it's a thing in New York. You got the governor there demanding congestion charges. In London, $16 a day. Now, it isn't going to bother the rich people who can afford to live in penthouses there anyway. They don't care. They'll be driving their supercars, their hypercars. They'll pay all the fees that are required or whatever. They'll make an exception for themselves. But the ordinary people who work there, they're going to have a lot of hardship. It may make the place more livable for you if you are a billionaire, but it's going to make it absolute hell for you. That's why I say they are smart cities for dumb people. And you got to really be dumb if you're going to buy into this 5G crap, because that's being put there as the required infrastructure for their robot cars to take away private cars. They're not going to build any roads. They're going to force you to use those robocars, and they're going to expose you to risky radiation that they know causes cancer. They already know that. They've already given themselves immunity. Back in 1996, Clinton signed the bill. They're going to push those smart cities on people who are too dumb to see what's going on. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Nowhere to run to. Welcome back. Here we got John Bolton's plan to starve millions of Venezuelans in submission. As Kurt Nimmo puts it, Venezuela's economic problems are in large part due to the country's socialist command economy. Of course, we know that. But there's also other factors in there. There's a role played by the United States, UN, the EU. They are not only openly bragging about, as Bolton is publicly announcing a coup and then posing with his notebook and, you know, his battle plans for the invasion and everything. Yeah, that was just an accident, I'm sure. But they're also talking about putting on sanctions that will cause even greater privation and starvation than the socialists have done. Remember when Madeleine Albright said, she was asked by friendly mainstream media, your Iraq sanctions killed over 500,000 children. What do you think about that? She said it was worth it. Well, really? Really? We've played that clip many, many times. It was worth it. Why? Why was it worth it? Is it worth it to make the socialist hell that they've created in Venezuela even worse? Kill more people with sanctions, with war, than they've already experienced in there? Is it worth it? Is that going to be the plan of the conservative? When Madeleine Albright does it, that was morally reprehensible. But she was given a pass by the left-wing mainstream media. Well, I'm not going to give John Bolton a pass for doing the same thing on the right. It's still wrong. Even if a Republican does it, it's still wrong. He is absolutely wrong about that. When we talk about starving people into submission, the Democrats have plans to literally do that. Cory Booker, who wants to be president, wants to starve us into submission with his no-meat diet. You know, this is the guy who was out there saying, I am Spartacus. I think we misunderstood him. He wasn't saying, I am Spartacus. He was saying, I am soy, I guess. Soy boy. I'm glad that Cory Booker likes a vegan diet. I'm glad that it worked out for him. But that doesn't give him a right to starve me or to impose his values on me. Leave me alone. Like I was saying earlier, I'm sick and tired of government telling me how hot my hot water heater can be and mandating devices that keep it from working. I'm sick and tired of them mandating safety devices that make my cars more expensive, less fuel efficient, and then mandating fuel economy at the same time, ramping that up. It's insane. Telling me how much water my toilet can use so it doesn't work. And I don't want them telling me what I can eat either. I just had this discussion with my heart people. They're all about the cholesterol numbers. You know, they fixed on that one thing and they went, oh, cholesterol. Well, that's nonsense. It's absolute nonsense. I've done a lot of research on that. And I'll just put this caveat out there, just like Penn Jillette. When he lost a great deal of weight. And he said, well, I'll tell you what I did. But he goes, if you take any nutrition advice from a magician who's working in Vegas, you're absolutely nuts. So I'll tell you what I'm doing. I'll tell you what I looked at. I'm not telling you to do what I'm doing. I'm not telling you to eat a vegan diet. I'm not telling you to eat meat either. I'm telling you to, do your own research, make up your own mind. And there's risks associated with anything. You know, if they want to measure cholesterol and take that down, there's risks with statins. Look that up. And when you look at cholesterol, I know from some of the people like Dave Feldman, who were on the ketogenic diet. These are young people, very healthy, measured everything. And all of a sudden, their cholesterol levels went off the chart. And he started looking at it. He was a systems engineer. He started looking at it as a system. And said, how is this thing working? Oh, I think I can figure out what's going on here. This cholesterol measurement is actually, my body is manufacturing cholesterol. If I dump a bunch of cholesterol in there, my body cuts back on it. So if I want to get these doctors off my back or the insurance company off my back, I can go on my ketogenic diet where I'm teaching my body to use fat as fuel rather than looking constantly for sugar. And I can get into that mode where my body starts changing what it's looking for and starts consuming the fat. And then if I do a preload of fat for 2 days, he noticed that there was a 2-day lag. So he said, if I go the other direction and then step that up, my body will kick back So he went on a super, super high fat diet and high calories. And then his body cut back the production of cholesterol. He fasted for 12 hours before the test, as you're supposed to do. And all of a sudden, guess what? His cholesterol levels plummeted. He told the cardiologist what he was going to do. And he said, this is what's going to happen. And he did it. The cardiologist goes, I'm going to have to rethink that. There's a lot of people who are rethinking all this as a metric. And so, you know, there's various risks that we face in life. We should be able to make those decisions. As I said at the top of the hour, everybody wants to live in a digital world fantasy where they think everything is either completely safe or completely dangerous. Everything's a one or a zero. No, it isn't. There's a floating risk. There's a risk to taking vaccines. There's a risk to not taking vaccines. There's a risk to taking statins, and there's a risk to not taking statins and to going on a different diet. I mean, I prefer, and so does my brain. I don't like the Mediterranean diet that they keep pushing on me because I don't like fish. It's just my preference. And I know that my brain likes to have good, healthy fats. So I'm actually looking more towards a ketogenic diet and intermittent fasting as a way to do that. But Cory Booker doesn't want me to be able to do that if I want to. Cory Booker says, as the headline says, meat eaters' days are numbered. He is a vegan, and he says that the world can't sustain. See, there's that word again, sustain. Can't sustain people who eat meat. He said, I tried this new lifestyle, and I'll never go back to eating meat. Well, good for him. He started on 2014. That's fine. But he says, I really like this, and I'm not going to go back. And guess what? Now I will force you to do what I like. So we've got yet another farting cow in Congress. This one is named Cory Booker, and this farting cow wants to go to the White House. He went on to say, you see the planet Earth moving towards what is the standard American diet. The tragic reality is this planet simply can't sustain billions of people who are out there, you know, eating meat and exhaling CO2 and so forth. Now, what we can't sustain and what we can't handle anymore are politicians like Cory Booker constantly exhaling CO2, telling us how to live our lives. Ben Sasse came out and said, well, Cory's a good dude. No, he's not. No, he's not. Ben's wrong about that. Anybody who wants to force their dietary choices on me at a governmental level, I mean, this is not even some medical advice that somebody's trying to say, well, you know, we've got this study, and then over here there's this study, we've got dueling studies or whatever, but I agree with these, and I'm going to try to convince you. He's not going to try to convince me of anything. And unlike my cardiologist, I can't fire this guy. So anyway, he says, Cory is a good dude, but tofurkey is a crime against humanity. Everybody needs juicy, perfectly cooked, medium-rare steaks from a cow raised here in Nebraska. We used to defend motherhood and apple pie when we were running for office here in America. I guess now we're going to have to defend motherhood and barbecue. But we're going to talk about the other side of this. The meat industry wants to ban tofu. We'll be right back.
Keep on lying. Using free speech to free minds. It's the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. I was just saying how Cory Booker is a vegan. He likes being a vegan. He loves it. But he doesn't want you to have the choice. Because if you eat meat, if you exhale, if you drive a car, that's not sustainable. Just like Obama. You know, we can't have y'all here in Africa having air conditioners. The planet would burn down. Remember when you went to Africa and actually said that to African people there? Said it to their face. We've played the video many times. I'm not going to play the video again. I'm frankly tired of hearing this kind of hypocritical lecturing. And I'm sick of hearing it from people like Cory Booker. And yet, on the other side, we've got Ben Sasse, who comes from Nebraska, which is beef country. And he's not only just kind of ribbing Cory Booker, you know, saying tofurkey is a crime against humanity. No, actually, the meat lobby is actually going to make certain types of fake meat and lab-grown meat a real crime. You know, Ben Sasse is kind of joking about that, but not really, because he's really part of the lobby that's going to go the other way. You know, right now, there's a massive subsidy of the meat industry. You may or may not recognize that $38 billion a year is given to the meat industry. You know, meanwhile, we can't find $1 billion to build a wall. But nevertheless, we can give $38 billion to people who are in that. And then we can give money to billionaires to build sports stadiums and so forth. About that same amount of money, quite frankly. But then they also subsidize fruits and vegetables, but not nearly as much. About 17 million instead of 38 billion. So there's a big disparity there. I don't think we ought to be subsidizing either one. Nevertheless, we now have, as you've got people moving to grow meat in labs. And if you want to eat, look, I like to eat meat. I like barbecue, and I'm not going anywhere near that stuff. That's just my opinion. If you want to eat meat grown in labs, go for it. I'm not signing up for that. But in Washington State, they want to make that a crime. They want to make it a crime to sell that. Lobbyists on behalf of the beef industry have introduced bills in more than a dozen states that make it a crime to describe plant-derived meat alternatives as meat. So, you know, if you've got soy bologna, they want to call that pure bologna and say you can't call that meat. You can't call it bologna. And we're going to make that a crime. Look, let's just have truth in advertising. Let's have the businesses. It's not easy being green. It's not easy eating greens either sometimes. I prefer meat. I don't want lab meat. But to everybody, their choice. And let's stop subsidizing or criminalizing certain types of food. But let's talk about something else that's a little bit more serious here, folks. When we talk about life and liberty. Let's talk about treating babies as pieces of meat. About that, because that is a movement that is coming through the country. And we hear it all from people who like to call themselves pro-choice. Well, they're not pro-choice about anything. They're not pro-choice, for example, about, you know, what you want to eat. They're not pro-choice about whether or not you want to get a vaccination or whether or not you want your kids to have a vaccination, which vaccines you want, how many you want at once. You don't get a choice about any of that stuff, they say, right? And I'm really sad to see conservatives and libertarians jumping on this let's attack the anti-vaxxers bandwagon of the mainstream media. I've got articles here in front of me from Reason and Breitbart attacking people who say we don't want to get vaccines. Can you believe that? Conservatives and libertarians now jumping in on this. I'm not so surprised about Reason because, you know, quite frankly, a lot of this pro-choice stuff that they talk about, and a lot of libertarians reflexively buy that label. Just understand, folks, it's just a slogan. It's just a rhetorical trick. They really don't mean they're pro-choice. These same people who want to mandate every little tiny aspect of our lives, including how much water our toilet uses and how hot our hot water heaters are and how water fuel is consumption is on our car. Every little aspect of our lives, they want to mandate and dictate. They're not pro-choice about anything. Nothing. My body, my choice? Oh, well, not when it comes to vaccines or medications or meat or vegetables. We're going to tell you what you're going to eat or not eat, right? And so this headline from Reason, anti-vaxxers are responsible for yet another outbreak of measles. Reason, come on. You can be better than that. You're just going to parrot this narrative that's being sold by the mainstream media. I've talked about this, the fake measles epidemic that's out there. I've had multiple articles here in Texas, one first here in Austin. Oh, yeah, this is an anti-vaccine hotspot here in Austin. Another one in Houston. Oh, look, you know, we got 10 or 20 people with measles. We got a total epidemic here. Let me tell you what. When I was growing up, we had an epidemic of measles on our neighborhood block because when one person got it, the parents would send the kids down to play with them. So we'd all get it, and they could get it over with, and we would have immunity. Like I was talking about the other day, you know, it's that's how you get real immunity. That's how you get real immunity. You get the vaccines and you don't have real immunity. And that's where it gets really dangerous, because then you can get that disease at a later stage in life when it is more difficult for you to deal with it. And that's what Breitbart is talking about. Measles outbreak causes teens from anti-vaccine families to seek help. They're very worried about this. Why? Because they're being propagandized by the mainstream media, by places like Reason and Breitbart, to be afraid of measles. And yeah, it's probably going to be more difficult for them as teenagers than it was as children, and more difficult as adults than it was as teenagers to deal with these childhood diseases. And I see this as an issue as well. I mean, this is part of the risk of not getting vaccines. My kids didn't get vaccines for this stuff. So they, like the people who did get vaccines, they don't have that kind of immunity because they didn't get real measles. You know, the people who got the vaccines are going to have that same kind of issue as well. They think they've got immunity, but they don't. And they're going to find that out because that is something that we've seen in every one of these so-called outbreaks. They even went to the Philippines and talked about, oh, look, there are 70 people who've died from measles. Well, they had 4,300 people that got it. And if you look at the death rate per 1,000, that was just over 3 per 1,000. You know what the child mortality rate in the Philippines is per 1,000? It was nearly 30. So it was one-tenth of what you would expect in average from children. I don't know if they died specifically from complications of that, but yeah, there is a risk. You get measles. It's not a big risk. That's why parents, you know, people get measles or mumps or whatever when we were growing up. It's a go down there and play with them so we can get this done. You can get it done at an early age because it's going to be more serious later in life. And so if you don't have the vaccine, yeah, you've got a risk of getting this later in life. Of course, you also have that risk if you do get the vaccine. But let's talk about treating babies like meat. We have a bookstore owner in Batavia, New York. It's upstate New York. He had closed his shop after New York, with great fanfare, had passed their late-term abortion bill. The day after, he put up a sign in the store window of his bookstore, said, "Close today. This is a day of mourning for New York State. We will not collect sales tax today for a tyrannical government that murders babies. We will resume regular business tomorrow, collecting sales tax under duress. End abortion now." And then after that, he and some others went to city council. This guy's a former pastor. He said, let's make this city a sanctuary city for the unborn, right here in New York, where they want to kill babies. He said the fact that killing babies is legal in New York is irrelevant. He said everything that Hitler did in Germany was legal under German law. Doesn't make it right. And we're going to talk about the details of that and what it really looks like when we come back. Stay with us. Welcome back. You know, it's Valentine's Day, and actually it was officially rolled out yesterday, the protein bars. New protein bars we have at InfoWarsStore.com. I actually tried the chocolate peanut butter. I haven't tried the vanilla coconut yet, but I had the chocolate peanut butter yesterday. It was really good. And it was kind of different because usually you have something that's chocolate peanut butter. It's chocolate on the outside. It's peanut butter on the inside. This is the other way around, which I like because I like chocolate even better than I like peanut butter. And so it's got the thin veneer of chocolate and the peanut butter on the outside, and the inside is a chocolatey stuff. But they're protein bars, folks, for your workout. It's only 240 calories. They've got 15 grams of protein each, and they taste great. At least I haven't had the vanilla coconut yet, but the chocolate peanut butter was really good. I've had a lot of protein bars in the past that had absolutely no taste, or they kind of tasted like sawdust or something. This doesn't. It's hard to believe that it's good for you because it tastes so good. And you can get 40% off if you get two boxes or more. Again, that's the InfoWars Life Protein Bars, the new product that we have. As Alex said, you can get your stuff from Whole Foods, Jeff Bezos. You can fuel Jeff Bezos, or you can fuel the fight for free speech and uncensored information. That's your choice. You know, we've got other food products as well. Ultimate Bone Broth, still 50% off. Ancient Super Nutrients and Modern Tech together and 50% off right now, Ultimate Bone Broth. And also, we have our Brain Force Plus, 50% off if you get it in a combination with our new product, Turbo Force, the Brain Synergy Combo. Look for that at InfoWarsStore.com. You can save 50% off of Brain Force Plus. All right, let's get back to what we were just starting to move towards. The guy who was in New York said, I'm not happy about that. Went to the city council and said, here we are in New York. We've just had the governor brag about the fact that he wants to kill babies right up to the point of birth. And he goes, let's make this a sanctuary city, this particular city here in upstate New York. Let's make it a sanctuary city for babies. How about that? That's a great idea. Now, you know, bringing those two issues together there, Kamala Harris did that, but in the other direction. She said, our American values are under attack. Babies are being ripped from their parents. Yeah, they are. They are. We are actually ripping babies from their parents, and she's fine with that. As a matter of fact, Kamala Harris, as Attorney General there in California, when we had undercover video from the Center for Medical Progress getting Planned Parenthood to say, yeah, you tell us what baby parts you want, we'll procure them for you. You know, custom. You just give us the order, and we'll get the baby parts for you. And when they exposed that, Kamala Harris went after them, not after Planned Parenthood. That's what she did as Attorney General. Now she wants to be president. And she has the audacity, the hypocrisy, to talk about babies being ripped from their parents. Unbelievable, the hypocrisy of these Democrats. Let me play for you. This is something that I tweeted out on my Twitter account, Libertarian. I tweeted this out end of last week, I think. It was testimony from a guy who does abortions, talking about what he actually does. You know, when they had the Gosnell trial, and I interviewed the people who wrote the book about that and who actually did a movie about that, they said the most amazing part of that trial, and actually they did the movie, was about the trial itself. They said, if you said that you were against abortion, you didn't make it on the jury. So all the people that were there were, quote unquote, pro-choice. And when they had, she said, the most damaging thing they had there was to have an abortion doctor just describe what they do. And she said, it just stunned the pro-choice jurors. And people were stunned when they heard what this doctor said. So I don't think it's enough for me just to put this out on Twitter, because I know that Jack Dorsey doesn't like you saying stuff about abortion. And I know that he shadow bans likes and visibility and so forth. And so I want you to hear this on this program. This is what this abortion doctor said, not at the Gosnell trial, but at another hearing. And see what you think about this.
Make sure that we have all of the fragments. Well, the media attention is always directed for the fetus and the gory parts, if you will, of providing the procedure, when the really important thing is that we've been able to help this young lady get on with her life. She's planning to go on to school, and she doesn't have to take over the responsibilities of parenting. And here in just a very few minutes, we're able to facilitate her decision to not be a parent at this time. Most of our patients are in the first trimester, and only 1% would be at this stage in the pregnancy. How are you doing? Are you feeling okay? You really did fine. We couldn't have asked for you to be a better patient. Everything was there, and you were 20 menstrual weeks.
I don't want to pull that out. Actually, I sent the wrong clip to them. I wanted the one that was testimony. That's my fault, guys. Sorry. There was actually testimony that a doctor gave where he went through the procedure, talked about grabbing with a forcep, grabbing an arm, pulling it out, then grabbing a leg and pulling it out and so forth. And really, literally, ripping babies from their parents and ripping them to pieces at the same time. But Kamala Harris doesn't care about that because that's not her American values. And now we've got Illinois moving to expand this as well. As a matter of fact, the guy who protested that, he said, you know, what is the best way to kill a baby? The guy who wanted to make a sanctuary city for the unborn there in New York. He said, what is the best way to kill a baby? Do we use an abortifacient? Do we use a saline abortion where the baby's burned alive in the mother's womb? Or maybe a surgical abortion? In the second trimester, when the baby is cut into pieces, then reassembled in a dish, perhaps it's better to deliver the baby in the third trimester, then stick a pair of scissors into his or her neck. That's what we're talking about here. That's what they call partial birth abortion. And now they're moving to make partial birth abortion permitted in Illinois, even though there is a federal law now that has it illegal. Illinois would repeal that in Illinois, and they would add other things as well. They want to remove criminal penalties for abortionists. They want to require all private insurance plans to cover abortions. They want to remove a mandate requiring minors to get parental consent before getting an abortion. And then, of course, repeal the partial birth abortion ban. That involves, folks, in case you don't understand that, that's the thing that really woke me up. I was running for Congress in 1996. People were asking me about abortion. I was a libertarian. I said, well, you know, I'd never had to think about it myself. And I said, I think that the government shouldn't be involved in our lives. I think we need to make those decisions ourselves. But then they started asking me about partial birth abortion. I thought, what the heck is that? And when I looked it up, here's how they describe it in this article here. They said, you partially deliver the baby vaginally before sucking its brains out with a vacuum or manually crushing the skull with forceps. You leave maybe the foot to the baby in. That's what partial birth abortion means. And then you twist the head off or crush the head or you know, stab the head with, so you can kill the brain, you know, kill the brain and so forth. That's what it is. It's technically not completely separated from the mother when you kill this baby that is capable of living on its own. And when I saw that, I changed my position on abortion. In the middle of running for Congress, it really woke me up. The president has raised concerns to Governor Cuomo about the Democrats' support of late-term abortions, said Deputy Press Secretary on Tuesday evening, talking about President Trump confronting Cuomo about how happy he is to kill full-term babies. You know, right there in New York, you've got Focus on the Family. As I said, they're going to have a rally there because New York has become a focal point for this, along with Virginia, but there are many other states that are following the example that Cuomo has set. So Focus on the Family is going to have speakers, they're going to have music, but they're also going to put up on the big screens that they have there in Times Square. They're going to put up a live ultrasound of a third trimester baby. So the people in New York can see what their government is going to allow people to kill. I said this to my wife after that campaign. She got involved with Birth Choice. It was a counseling group that would talk to people who had pregnancies that they were concerned about and say, well, you know, there are a lot of people who would like to have kids out there, people who would accept those children. The pastor in New York who had the bookstore who was protesting that, he said, you know, Focus on the Family. It was talking about what used to happen in the Roman Empire. They said they took unwanted kids and just throw them on the trash heap. It was the Christians who took them off the trash heap. Because life has value. We're created in the image of God. And I said, we need to show people the images of these living, breathing, moving children. And so we need to have something like we do have now. Which is a 4D ultrasound. And good for Focus on the Family for putting pictures up. They're going to do a live 3D, 4D ultrasound there in Times Square.
Broadcasting with the power of the First Amendment. It's the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. Joining us this segment is Eric Peters. Of course, I love his website, epautos.com. You should go there, check it out, support him. It is supported by donations of people who go there. And I want to talk to him about the Green New Deal, which, as I've said, I see this really as a red old deal where the old communists are holding all the cards, and they're dealing from the bottom of the deck, trying to control our lives. We've seen all this stuff before. And so there is a massive cultural revolution that I think in many respects looks like Mao's great leap forward, where we're going to send everybody back to the dark ages. It's going to be massive deprivation, massive austerity. And of course, Eric is fully on that. One of the things that I saw from Eric Peters, I think it was while I was out, he was talking about what's going on with the yellow vests and why they're pushing back. You know, it's kind of interesting. You know, we have the Greens who say, you know, that they're green, but they're actually really red. And we got the yellow vests there. It's kind of like a traffic light, isn't it, Eric? You know, we've got the red, the yellow, and the greens. And I think we all need to exercise caution here. But you are the one to point out that a big part of what's happening with the yellow vest movement is not only a push against the repressive taxes that are destroying their standard of living, but also the anger at the speed limits being dropped down to 50 miles an hour and the massive destruction of speed cameras all across the country.
Yeah, there are regions in France, according to reports that I've read, where 90% or more of the automated speed cameras have been physically destroyed.
Yeah, good for them.
Yeah, good for them. You know, it's an outpouring of back against the wall frustration by these people who've literally, like in the old movie, had enough and they can't take it. They're not going to take it anymore.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Yeah, and it really is. You know, I read a quote the other day from one of the people there saying, this is destroying our lives, as you just point out, backs against the wall type of stuff. And it isn't ideological at all with these people. It's just like, I can't live like this. You guys are destroying my life. I can't afford to own property in Paris if I have to work. I have to live outside of the city. But you don't want me commuting. You don't want there to be any such thing as suburbs. You're going to put congestion charges and fuel taxes and prohibitions on people to have cars. And then I read a quote from Macron, and it was all of this sophistry, this intellectual sophistry and nonsense. I mean, totally out of touch with the people. It's the verbal equivalent of let them eat cake type of thing.
Yeah, there's a cognitive dissonance going on, an effrontery. You know, the people are being oppressed in this manner, being made to pay $8 a gallon for fuel, being told that they can't drive any faster than 50 miles an hour without being hit with extortionate fines. And, of course, none of these measures apply to the elite. Not just Macron, but you know the people in the big corporations that effectively have become the same thing as the government, unfortunately, in a lot of Western countries. These people are, and I have a picture on my website of this, you know, you've seen the motorcades of the gigantic SUVs and the big armored vehicles, and they're bulleting along on the highway at twice the speed limit. You know, and people see this, and they're outraged by it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, they're going to have all of their stuff, just like they're going to have their private planes as they ban planes for everybody else. They're going to have their supercars, their hypercars. They just want to get us off of the roads.
Yeah, that's exactly it. That is exactly it. I think at some level they resent the fact that the explosion in material wealth, the increase in the middle class that occurred during the latter part of the previous century, eliminated a lot of the meaningful distinctions between the elite and the average working guy. The average working guy could have a house. He could have a vehicle. He had the freedom to come and go, and that eliminated this sort of special class distinction that you had if you were a member of the 1%, the elite. And they're trying to reestablish that.
Yeah, these elitists have a very different approach to Henry Ford, who said, I want to make these cars, but I want my workers to be able to afford them.
Yep.
They don't
yep.
want you to afford them. They don't want workers. They want robots. I guess maybe the robots are going to build whatever they need, because certainly the robots are going to buy their products. We'll be right back with more from Eric Peters. We're going to talk about safety and also about being tasered 11 times over a turn signal.
Deceit. Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. We're talking to Eric Peters. You can find his writings at epautos.com. Great practical reviews of real cars that you may be wanting to buy or considering to buy, while you still have the freedom to do that. Also, a lot of articles about how they're trying to take away your freedom of choice, mandate things on cars that are going to make them unaffordable, and basically just outright ban them, as occasional cortex made the mistake of actually coming out and telling people. And so now they're trying to push back against, oh, no, we don't really mean that. You even got Bill Gates and Melinda Gates coming out and saying, well, you know, we really don't want to tell people, you know, what's going on. We're really not going to go that way. I can imagine that privately they're saying, can you believe she actually told people where this is going? We know where this is going. And Eric has an article on epautos.com. Are the new cars safe? He's got a chart there. See if you can pull up this chart from the article. Very interesting to see how traffic fatalities have been decreasing, but all of a sudden, in just the last year or two, as we've been bringing in all kinds of new safety equipment being mandated on cars, you know, backup cameras are now mandated on cars, along with a lot of other things, as they've been bringing in this new and quite a bit more expensive safety equipment, we've seen a sudden surge in traffic fatalities. Mm-hmm. The third year in a row that traffic fatalities increased was 2018. At the same time, they're bringing in all of this wonderful new preemptive technology. What do you think's going on with this, Eric?
Well, what they're doing is they're discouraging people from paying attention to driving, and with the predictable result that people are wrecking as a result of that. They are actively being discouraged from looking out on the road and seeing what's happening around them and counting on these systems to react on their behalf in the event there's a problem, like another car pulling out in front of them. They're essentially, they've assumed that people are idiots and incompetent, and so we're going to let the technology take over for them. Problem, of course, is that the technology isn't perfect either, and the technology makes mistakes. And now you've got the double whammy of the person not paying attention and the technology not working, and boom, before you know it, you just smashed into the car in front of you.
Yeah, a good example of that in microcosm is the Tesla Autopilot. It's not been widely reported, but we just had another accident, I think it was over the weekend in New Jersey. And it did follow the same pattern that we've seen before, where you got like an exit lane that is splitting on the interstate, and it gets confused with the lane markings. It doesn't know whether to go left or go right, and so it goes, kind of splits the difference and goes down there. We've seen this happen at least twice in the past. One of them, it drove somebody straight into the barrier and killed him. This happened with this guy, and he said he was struggling to take control back from the Tesla Autopilot. Wouldn't give it up.
Yeah, and people should be aware that it's not just Teslas. A number of new cars have an advanced version of something called Lane Keep Assist, which when it initially appeared, it would beep at you if you weren't paying attention and the car started to wander across the double yellow into the other lane. Now some of the more advanced systems will actually attempt to countermand your steering inputs. So it's a very disconcerting feeling. You're driving down the road, and the car, the steering wheel, literally jerks and moves because it's connected to electric motors, and it's attempting to fight you as you try to control the vehicle, which is in itself, in my opinion, inordinately dangerous. It's amazing to me that this stuff is allowed.
Well, it's the nanny state mandating nanny technology in their nanny cars, and of course, nanny knows better than you do. And we can't even call it the nanny state anymore because now we've had some female Democrat running for office saying, that's sexist. And it's like, no, it's authoritarian.
Sure. They're trying to infantilize the population, and by creating an infantilized population, they create the pretext for parenting the infantilized population. That's really the best way to understand this, in my opinion.
Yeah, and also to merchandise, again, distracting you with all these different things. Not your site, but a lot of the other sites, I look at them, and when they do a review of a new car or a new truck, all they're talking about is the entertainment system and the bells and whistles there to keep you busy.
That's it.
It's like, are you serious? I mean, it's getting to the point where I remember when our children were young, we would go to the grocery store and they would have shopping carts that you could stick the kids in that had a little wheel there. And you could turn the wheel around, and of course it didn't do anything, but it kept them busy.
Yeah.
And and now they're not necessarily even trying to keep you busy turning the wheel. They want to keep you busy playing with that iPad that they've glued to the dashboard and maybe exclude all the other instruments there in the car. But you've got like General Motors using that to market. They're going to let you shop while you drive. They're going to tell you what restaurants, and I think they're going to be constantly pushing information to you, merchandising that and distracting you and making you a worse driver so they can then say, well, we got to take humans out of the equation altogether.
Well, there's profit to be made there, so that's why they're doing it. Yeah. But it's interesting to me that so many people don't pick up on this disconnect. On the one hand, there are laws in most states that prohibit texting while driving or being on your cell phone while you're driving. And yet the manufacturers are all installing the equivalent of a very big smartphone right there in the dashboard of a car with all these little tap, swipe, and mouse inputs that are exactly like a cell phone. And they're encouraging people to play with all these gadgets instead of drive the car and pay attention to what's going on around them.
Exactly. You look at the Tesla stuff, and they love the fact that, oh, look at this. They've replaced all the instruments and everything. They've got it right here. They got a great big touchpad in the center of the thing. I look at that as an engineer. I think that's the worst design I've ever seen. Unless you want to deliberately make somebody crash.
Yes.
You've got to pinch and zoom and twist this touchpad that has absolutely no tactile feedback. So you've got to look at it while you're doing it. And even to adjust the direction of the airflow coming out of your air conditioning vents, not just the speed or the temperature, but even the direction. I mean, it's not even a physical air vent that you can move to the left or right or up or down. You've got to actually, you know, pinch and zoom and you know, play with a touchpad to
do that. Which, by the way, is much more challenging than it sounds when the vehicle is moving. If you've ever operated one of these systems, your finger on that pad, it's moving because the car is moving. So you have to really concentrate to get your index finger to hit, you know, to touch exactly the right part of the screen to get it to do something. So you're concentrating on that while you're not concentrating on the road.
I complained about that very thing with my wife when we had a rental car that had we had to do some things. We had to use a touchpad with that. But I've seen auto reviewers who will criticize, for example, Mazda. They take off your ability to actually use that touchpad while the car is in motion. Mm-hmm. They have tactile controls in the center of the console, and they say, "Oh, this is awful! Mm-hmm. You know how backwards this is." And it's like, no, it's about understanding that you got a human who's driving a car here, and you don't want them playing with, you know, we have laws, as you pointed out, that recognize that that's distracted driving, and they understand it's distracted driving, but they get criticized by the automotive press for doing that. It's amazing.
Well, there's this social and political correctness, and related to that, when you mentioned Mazda, a thought popped into my head. Mazda gets criticized because they are one of the few manufacturers that hasn't really guzzled the electric car Kool-Aid, and they've really focused on improving the efficiency of their internal combustion engines and have attempted, so far not successfully, to bring some high-economy diesels into the market, which, of course, were pulled from the market largely when Volkswagen got crucified for daring to sell people 50-mile-per-gallon cars that you could buy for $22,000.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, they did a great design. They were able to get a gasoline engine to switch over into a diesel mode, which improved, I think it was something like 30% better fuel economy and torque at the same time.
Mm-hmm, yep.
And you know, it's like, hey, we can stretch out, you know, we can solve this from an engineering standpoint, but they don't want it solved from an engineering standpoint, just like they don't want clean coal factories. They just want to ban coal and bankrupt anybody that has coal. They want to ban internal combustion engines and bankrupt any company that sells them.
They do. Communism didn't sell, so now they're trying to sell communism under the guise of environmentalism. That's ultimately what this is all about.
Yeah, yeah, and it's about controlling every aspect of our life. So they put this safety equipment out there, and, you know, we have officers all over the country that are going to tell us, you know, that we have to, you know, how we're going to drive and give us tickets. Now, they say that's for our safety. We know that it's for their revenue. But we've got a good example here that you talked about yesterday. I've seen the pictures of this. Tasered 11 times over a turn signal. People will absolutely not believe this story. We're going to cover this. Happened in Glendale, Arizona. This guy, in front of his children, the way he was bullied by these police officers. Now, I hope something happens to these guys. Now, that's the key thing. You can have, look, I'm not going to knock all the cops because any institution can have and will have bad people in it. The question is, will they be protected or purged? Because if they are protected, then the institution itself is corrupted. We'll be right back with Eric Peters. Stay with us. Yeah, and increasingly, the man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware is also like we used to see only in the World War II Nazi films of occupied Europe. These people are saying your identity papers, and they're not saying your identity papers, please. They're saying, give me your identity papers. And we're seeing in New York, the NYPD is using every opportunity to swab people's mouths so they can get DNA. I've got a video we're going to play later in the program of the Purple Heart triple amputee, Brian Kalfagi, who also got hammered by Facebook after being lured into spending $300,000 to promote his website and what he was doing there and ads at Facebook. They just banned him because they didn't like his politics. Now he gets hammered by the Nazis of the TSA, harassing him as a triple amputee because he's a threat. This guy who lost an arm and two legs in the service of this country, being hassled by the TSA. And we're talking about this particular case that Eric wrote about on his website, epautos.com. Tasered 11 times over a turn signal. Tell us what happened to this passenger, not even a driver, but a passenger in Glendale, Arizona, Eric.
Yeah, this is a particularly horrific and egregious example of what I call submission training.
Yes.
Apparently, a man, they're driving a car with passengers in it, including a child, committed a minor traffic violation, didn't signal when he turned into this parking lot and parked. And so the cops came up and immediately escalated the situation into an incredibly violent takedown. It happened within seconds. You know, you have the entirety of the video, so there's no question about what happened. They began to demand that the passenger in the front seat produce identification, and a lot of people don't understand or don't know that in many states, even if you didn't do anything, if the driver commits a moving violation and you get pulled over, they can demand ID of the passengers. Well, this guy was a little surprised and, you know, asked questions. Now, he wasn't violent.
Yeah, because we thought that only happened in Nazi Germany, where you're walking down the street and the Nazis walk up to you and say, give me your identity papers, right?
Right. Well, almost immediately, the cops begin to violently assault this guy. They shove a taser onto his body and begin to hit him with this taser, and they drag him out of the car, and they throw him on the floor, and this is where it becomes, I mean, pathological and sadistic. They actually pull the guy's pants down, and his kid is in the back seat, and shove the testicle into his groin and administer the taser shock to his genitals.
Wow. Yeah, they didn't shove the testicle in his groin. They shoved the taser into his groin and tasered his testicles.
And this is just pure, outright, gratuitous sadism. They can't even come up with the usual excuse, which is that they, quote-unquote, feared for their safety. You had three large, burly cops. If you watch the video, you'll see that the man is a slightly built guy. And again, he was not resisting them. He was not violently doing anything. He just merely was slightly questioning the business of being required to produce identification.
And I guess the only thing they did wrong was they forgot to erase the body cameras.
Yeah. You know, and the really dispiriting thing is, you know, you could say, well, okay, that one cop was a bad apple. You hear that argument a lot. Well, there were two other cops that stood there and participated and watched. They didn't restrain the guy. They didn't much less arrest him or charge him. And as far as I know, to this date, that cop is still a cop. He has not been removed from the force. He's not been criminally charged for doing what is clearly, there's no question about it from a legal point of view, he committed a brutal, violent, completely unjustified assault.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I think the fact that these guys not only stood there, but that they didn't bother to try to cover that up. They didn't see it. They did anything wrong. That's the amazing thing, because they didn't try. If they had known, if they'd shot an innocent man or something like that and had been caught on body camera, they would have tried to delete that. We've had that kind of situation before when cops were caught doing something wrong and they were videotaped doing that. But they didn't even bother to get rid of that. They didn't think there was anything wrong with that. And they didn't stop the guy. They didn't try to cover it up because, hey, obviously that's standard operating procedure.
And there's no summary immediate arrest or criminal charge. And this is not by any means an isolated incident, unfortunately. I posted something the other day, a similar incident. There was a man, slightly built guy in his 40s, was coming home from work. He happened to be diabetic. And he went into insulin shock while he was driving and began sort of wandering across the road and was ultimately pulled over. And without any preliminary, without attempting to establish, well, what's the problem? What's wrong here? They grab him and pull him violently out of the car and begin to beat the living hell out of the guy. They put him in the hospital.
Wow. Well, we had a similar instance to that here in Texas. Had a guy who was involved in an accident. It might have been because of insulin shock to start with. And when the cop went over to him and started asking him for ID and things like that, he would not respond because he was in shock and he'd had an accident. And so the cop got frustrated and angry and tasered him until he had brain damage.
Yep.
And so we see this type of thing happening. And as you're pointing out, this is okay. This is standard operating procedure. They don't stop each other. They don't try to even cover this up. They're not ashamed of it because they've been trained that this is okay. They're trained in a shoot first curriculum now. In many of the police academies, as a matter of fact, there was an experienced police officer in New Mexico who said, I'm not going to teach this anymore. I'll resign first. Because mm-hmm. this is coming from the feds for the most part. But as you pointed out earlier, it is submission training. And I think it's the same thing we're seeing with the TSA. Yeah. You let me put my hands on any part of your body that I want to. Because you are nothing but cattle to me. Then I will. We have a positive as well as negative operant conditioning. This is B.F. Skinner type of stuff, right? You let me do this, and you get the positive reward of now you can get on the plane and fly. Or if you don't do it, there's going to be a negative reward, quote unquote, on the other end of that. And let's remember that B.F. Skinner, a pure behaviorist said, the name of his book where he's bragging about that was Beyond Freedom and Dignity. I think that's where America has gone now. We've gone beyond freedom and dignity, haven't we?
We have. Well, people are being habituated to this. It's becoming normalized. Yeah. You know, the TSA is a very good example. People are now subject to this treatment, which, you know, 30 years ago would have been unimaginable outside of a federal prison. So people are being made used to the idea of a government, somebody in a government costume, literally sticking their hands down their pants, you know, for just because they can.
And it's for safety.
And the humiliation and degradation that goes along. Well, that's the pretext. The idea that it's for safety is risible. It's absurd.
Oh, yeah, it's a pretext for everything, isn't it? You know, everything is sacrificed for safety and national security, but then when Hillary Clinton violates national security and gets, the CIA's agents in China killed, no problem for that.
Well, here's an interesting little tidbit. You know, if you fly private, if you're rich and have the means to fly private, you don't have to go through the gate rape.
Wow.
So, you know, think about that. Now, if allegedly this is to protect our freedoms from the evildoers, so it's somehow we're supposed to believe that it's beyond the means of an international terrorist group to charter an airplane and fly private?
Yeah, because they would rather get a big airliner, right?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. All right, we're going to be right back, and we're going to go after electric vehicles in this next segment. There was a wake-up call for people. I talked a little bit about this, but we're going to get back into the electric vehicles because, you know, we've got to get rid of all internal combustion engines. We'll be right back with Eric Peters, epautos.com. Stay with us.
Decoding the mainstream propaganda. It's the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. We're talking to Eric Peters, epautos.com. You know, Eric has been talking a long time about the Green New Deal, even before Occasional Cortex has been talking about it, even before she slipped up and told everybody where this is all headed. I've been talking about it for a very long time as well. And that's the key thing that we've got here. But, you know, let's not just say that this is a Democrat problem. Yes, she came out with this ridiculous plan and made the mistake, as I said, of telling everybody how this is going to play out in your lives. But we've also got multiple candidates for president with the Democrats, at least six of them in the Senate alone, which have signed on to this absurd thing. Mitch McConnell, in a rare moment of almost humor and human emotion, got a little bit of a glimmer in his eyes. He said, well, we're going to put this up to a vote and let them spell this out exactly what they support here. But let's understand that it's not just the Democrats. We've got flakes in the GOP as well. As a matter of fact, one of them, Jeff Flake, as a final parting shot, worked with Democrat Chris Coons to introduce a bipartisan carbon tax. So this is something that goes on both sides of the aisle. And it's something that's going to be coming at us. But let's talk a little bit about the practicality, or rather the impracticality of this. Eric's got an article up at epautos.com, a cold breeze for EVs. And as part of this, Eric, you point out that these batteries suffer a kind of erectile dysfunction in cold weather. I would say that their juice kind of shrinks. Maybe we should call it electile dysfunction.
That's hilarious. I love it. But it's, you know, it's very serious and it's very true. And it's such a common sense thing. Most people understand, you know, with a regular car, not even an electric car, when it's 20 degrees outside or minus 20 degrees outside, your car kind of has a trouble. You know, it's harder for it to start. It goes, the battery it has less capacity to get your car going. Well, the same scales and applies with electric cars. Battery performance, their efficiency decreases as the temperature drops. And as everybody knows, last week we had this massive winter cold front move through the country, and a lot of people were dealing with extraordinarily cold weather. And voila, they found out that the range of their electric cars in many cases dropped by 40 or 50% or more. There's a compounding problem there. It's not just that the batteries are less efficient in cold weather. In an electric car, everything is powered by the battery, including the heat. And the defroster, and the headlights, and you know everything else. So you know if you want to stay warm, you turn the heater on, and now your range drops again. And now it's minus 20 outside. And what happens if you can't find the supercharger because it's buried in a snowdrift, and it's minus 20 out, and your car just ran out of juice, and now you not only can't move, you can't even keep warm.
And the Democrats are so happy because they didn't want you moving in the first place. Yeah, AAA actually did this and quantified it. They looked at cars, and it's not just the cold, it's also the heat. Mm-hmm. They looked at cars and the effect on electric cars and their batteries, and they looked at cars at 20 degrees Fahrenheit and at 95 degrees Fahrenheit. Well, I got news for everybody. It was a lot colder than 20 degrees in Illinois and the Midwest over the last couple of weeks. Much, much. Try minus 20 or minus 30 degrees or a wind chill factor of minus 75 degrees Fahrenheit. And it gets a lot hotter here in Texas than 95. I mean, I would love it if we had 95 degrees here during the summer in Texas. But typically, it's triple digits. Once we get into July and on until we hit to get into September.
Yeah, then you have the same problem again, compounding. Mm-hmm. You know, the high heat is hard on the battery. You see a reduction in efficiency and capacity. And if it's 110 degrees outside, I'm assuming probably most people are going to want to turn on the air conditioning.
That's right.
And air conditioning is a real energy hog. It takes a lot of power to run an air conditioning compressor. And if you do that, well, you know, all of a sudden you can't go nearly as far as they told you you could go in your electric car. And the thing that made me happy the other day was just what you mentioned, that AAA, which is, you know, mainstream purveyor of information, actually did this study, and it actually did get picked up by even some of the lefty media. CNBC ran an extensive story on it. So the truth is starting to finally percolate.
Yeah, and you know, it's not just, as you pointed out, it's really rough on batteries. Whenever I've got a battery that's marginal, even though I've always lived in pretty moderate or even warm climates, once we have a cold day, even if it just drops a little bit, and again, they're looking at stuff that's down at, you know, 20 degrees.
Yep.
So we get down, you know, to into the high 20s or something like that on a particular day. If I've got a battery that's marginal, it just kills it.
Right.
And I can't imagine what's going on when a car is all batteries. I mean, this has got to – not only does it reduce their range, as they're pointing here, by 38% at just 20 degrees. Imagine if it gets to minus 27 degrees, and that's the air temperature, not the wind chill factor. What is it doing to those – not just the range of the batteries, but what is it doing to the batteries themselves in terms of their life? I mean, is it killing all these batteries? And then how expensive is that when you got to replace – the batteries in an electric car, that's the most expensive thing.
Yeah, there's a whole checklist of problems here. Another one is that the safeguard, the Band-Aid, in order to prevent the battery from there's a term, and you're probably familiar with this in electronics, called bricking. You know, if one of these batteries gets below a certain temperature, it literally fuses and is no longer useful.
Yep.
So what they do is they build in an internal heater to keep the battery temperature at a certain point. But again, there's no free lunch when it comes to energy, and so you have to use energy to keep the battery going, but that reduces the range of the car, and then you get the compounding problem. Turn on the air conditioner. Turn on the heat. It's hot outside or it's cold outside. There are so many problems with these electric cars that most people, once they become aware of these problems, would want nothing to do with them, and that is exactly why they're being forced down people's throats.
Yeah, and when we look at that, you know, the fact that we've talked about many times that only 1% of the people choose electric cars, even though they were heavily subsidized.
Mm-hmm.
We just had the middle of this week, Tesla slashing their North American delivery team by more than half. These are the people, again, Tesla doesn't have a dealer network. They deal with people directly. These are people that they hired specifically for this massive demand, we were told, of the Model 3. And it looks like that massive demand for Model 3s has just bricked.
Well, not only that, and you know, you and I talked about this several weeks ago. There is the matter of the fraud that was perpetrated, in my opinion, I'll use that word, it's a strong word, by Musk, who told everybody, the SEC, the public, that he was going to be offering a $35,000 electric car and took deposits from, I don't know, tens of thousands of people for this alleged $35,000 electric car. Well, guess what? He's not selling it. He's not delivering it. The only Model 3 you can get is the one that starts, and again, that's also deceitful, starts at $44,000, but its actual price, once you've added a couple of options to the thing, is close to $60,000.
Yeah. It's kind of like the fraud that the SEC found him guilty of when he said he's got outside funding that's going to be coming in on 420.
Yeah, and by then, the way,
And then they gave him a slap on the wrist.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, they didn't put him in jail. They didn't say that he lied to them or whatever and throw him in jail or that he was doing insider trading or manipulating the stock market. A lot of people lost a lot of money because of that joke.
Sure. And I'd like to know when I can get my ticket, you know, for my to take the rocket ship to Mars. Remember that one?
Yeah, that's well, he did find a good use for his Tesla Roadster, you know, shoot it into space.
And the battery died almost immediately, too.
All right. And let's talk about the investment. You know, when look at the Green New Deal, right? They're talking about, oh, we're going to have an investment in infrastructure, as if they want to do any of that. They don't want to build roads. They don't want to repair roads or bridges or whatever. They call tax cuts expenditures. But when they spend money, it's an investment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a manipulation of language, analogous to being called a customer of the IRS or the DMV.
Yeah,
you know, words just somehow become the opposite of what their meaning used to be. The Fourth Amendment says that we're supposed to be free from unreasonable searches, and now we're subject to being stopped at random without probable cause.
That's right. Yeah, this is an investment, just like these other measures are for our safety and for our security. Thanks for joining us. Your website, Eric, is a wealth of information about freedom. And right now, there's a lot of different things. Free speech, our freedom to protect ourselves, you know, gun prohibition, that's coming up. We're going to talk about that. But also, our freedom to move. I mean, we don't have that's not specifically enumerated in the Bill of Rights. That doesn't mean that we don't have it, but it means it's easier for them to gaslight the American public. EPautos.com. Thank you, Eric. Welcome back. You know, we're just talking to Eric Peters about the Green New Deal, the red old scam that we've seen time and time again. But it's not just our individual freedom that is on the auction block here by the politicians as they negotiate this. You have to understand the geopolitical issues involved here. Energy is a big deal. It is a big deal. We've had for the last 100 years or so, that's been one of the central things on which wars were fought. And now we've got a realignment that is happening because of the discovery and refinement techniques, because technology has expanded our access to petroleum products. They're having to try, in order to try to control us, they have to control energy. You know, for the longest time, we've seen the bankers trying to control society through banks and through printing currency or devaluing currency or whatever. But ultimately, and of course, the bankers and many of the globalist politicians are talking about how ultimately that was going to devolve into the control of energy, and that maybe, you know, we wouldn't have central banks, we'd have central control of energy. That, I believe, in my opinion, is the bigger picture here. The control of energy is the control of people, the control of nations, the control of economies, the control of sovereignty. And so what we're seeing now, and I'm going to cover this later in the broadcast, we're now seeing a new OPEC, and it's based on gas, not gasoline. And we're going to get into that in just a moment. But just one final thing here from Eric's article about the heavy toll that winter took on electric vehicles. As people saw their batteries dying, so did demand for electric cars throughout the Midwest. But he compares a couple of different cars from Nissan. Take a look at the Nissan Leaf, he says, and that is the lowest priced electric vehicle on the market, $30,000. Its best case range is 150 miles. Now, the Nissan Versa is essentially the same thing as a Nissan Leaf, except it's an internal combustion engine instead of an electric vehicle. It's half the price. It has more than twice the range. It's got 34 miles per gallon. It's got a 10.8-gallon tank, so that means it's got 367 miles. So that's more than twice the difference, 150 miles for the EV, 367-mile range for the gasoline car. And then think about this. It's hours to recharge these electric cars versus merely seconds to fill up a 10-gallon tank. I've timed it myself. I've got about that size tank on my small car, and I've timed the amount of, you know, how long it takes to pump the gas. I'm not talking about how long does it take for me to process a credit card or go inside and pay or whatever, because you got to do that. You'd have to do that with the electric stuff anyway, right? So that part is not a part of it, but just how long does it take to transfer the fuel or transfer the electricity to refill your vehicle? And we're talking about 20, 30 seconds, typically, versus many, many hours at a regular charge, or if you've got a quote-unquote high-speed charger, it's still going to take, 40 minutes or whatever. As he points out, you can only fill these things up 80%, and these fast chargers are hard to find, and they're not going to be working that quickly in cold weather. So there's a lot of practical issues with it. And just one more to think about that I mentioned yesterday. The fact is that all of our renewable energy sources, like you want to collect the stuff with the solar power instead of burning fuel. Well, good luck with that, because the materials that you're going to need for those solar panels, the photovoltaic panels, that's going to require some rare earth metals. And that is not renewable. So at their core, they're not renewable. The batteries themselves, the materials that we're using, things like lithium, those are not readily available. They are not renewable. There's limited sources of lithium. And as I pointed out yesterday, it's one of the reasons why we are in Afghanistan and going to stay there for a long time, because they've got a lot of lithium there. That's why it's just like the reason that there's so much fighting going on in the Middle East. Because there's a lot of oil there. Well, there's a lot of lithium for all these batteries that everybody wants to use. A lot of lithium in Afghanistan. So we're going to be there for quite some time. All right, I want to get back into gun prohibition. We're going to talk a little bit more about abortion and the hypocrisy of that. But before we get into that, I just want to tell you a little bit about our new product. We've got a InfoWars Life protein bars. We just introduced them in two flavors. We've got chocolate peanut butter and vanilla coconut. As I said earlier, I got a preview of that yesterday. I've had the chocolate peanut butter. It was delicious. Chocolate on the inside, a veneer of peanut butter on the outside, which is usually different on most foods. And again, it tastes great. Tastes like it is some kind of a candy treat or whatever. I think it's very appropriate that Alex roll these things out around Valentine's Day, because it does taste like you're eating something sweet, something like candy, a treat. But it is natural protein. It is packed with fiber. It's only 240 calories, but it has 15 grams of protein in it. And you can get it 40% off if you get two or more boxes. We also have a couple of other specials. We still have our Brain Synergy Combo. That is Brain Force Plus, 50% off if you get it in combo with our other nutraceutical, our new product, Turbo Force. And we have Ultimate Bone Broth, 50% off this ancient super nutrients modified with modern technology to make it even more effective. Ultimate Bone Broth, 50% off at InfoWarsStore.com. All right, earlier I wanted to play a doctor's description. As I said, in the Gosnell trial, one of the things that shocked the pro-choice jurors, and they were the only ones that they allowed, it was disqualifying if you said that you were adamantly opposed to abortion. They said, well, you know, we're not... We're saying abortion is not illegal here. We're looking to see if this this doctor Gosnell violated what the that we allow abortion, but did he go beyond that, beyond what we allow? So they made all of the jurors had to be pro-choice, as they like to use that term. And again, that is a gaslighting term because they're not pro-choice on anything except killing. And when they had a doctor describe what the abortion procedure was to the jurors, they were absolutely stunned. And I've got the right clip now. This is a doctor in a different hearing, but basically describing the same procedure, describing it to people. I want you to hear this as he describes it.
I only have 5 minutes, so I'm going to get right to it. Second trimester D&E abortions performed between roughly 14 and 24 weeks of gestation. Your patient today is 17 years old. She's 22 weeks pregnant. Her baby is the length of your hand plus a couple of inches. And she's been feeling her baby kick for the last several weeks, but she's asleep on an operating room table. You walk into that operating room scrubbed and gowned, and after removing laminaria, you introduce a suction catheter into the uterus. This is a 14 French suction catheter. If she were 12 weeks pregnant or less, basically the width of your hand or smaller, you could basically do the entire procedure with this. But babies this big don't fit through catheters this size. After suctioning the amniotic fluid out from around the baby, you introduce an instrument called a Sofer clamp. It's about 13 inches long. It's made of stainless steel. The business end of this clamp is about 2.5 inches long and a half inch wide. There are rows of sharp teeth. This is a grasping instrument. When it gets a hold of something, it does not let go. A D&E procedure is a blind abortion, so picture yourself introducing this and grabbing anything you can blindly and pull, and I do mean hard, and out pops a leg about that big, which you put down on the table next to you. Reach in again, pull out an arm about the same length, which you put down on the table next to you, and use this instrument again and again to tear out the spine, the intestines, the heart and lungs. Head on the baby that size is about the size of a large plum. Can't see it, but you pretty good idea you've got it if you've got your instrument around something and your fingers are spread about as far as they go. You know you did it right if you crush down on the instrument and white material runs out of the cervix. That was the baby's brains. Then you could pull out skull pieces. And you have a day like I had a lot of times. Sometimes a little face comes back and stares back at you. Congratulations. You just successfully performed a second trimester D&E abortion. You just affirmed her right to choose.
That is what Cuomo is so proud of. That is what that son of a gun, Ralph Northam, is so proud of. When he said, if a mother's in labor, I can tell you exactly what would happen. The infant would be delivered. The infant would come out comfortably. The infant would then be resuscitated, if that's what the mother and family desired. And then a discussion would ensue between the physician and the mother as to whether we're going to kill this kid or not. I think it's very appropriate that they diverted everybody from that reality. I'm sorry you had to hear that. I don't like hearing that myself. But you need to be confronted with reality of what's happening here. Just like Focus on the Family is going to confront people with reality that they're destroying a human life by doing a live 4D ultrasound in Times Square, right there, where these people are so proud of the fact that they're killing full-term babies here. It's great that Northam would distract everybody from his murdering infanticide ideas with blackface, because this all began as a black genocide with Margaret Sanger and Prescott Bush as the treasurer.
Reverse engineering the high-tech takeover plan. This is the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. I just played for you a description of a doctor who's performed abortion. A horrific description. If you were watching that, you saw people in the audience burying their faces, crying as he's talking about ripping out the individual parts of the baby. That is the cruel reality covered up by people like Cuomo, who lights up buildings in pink. Different aspects of skyscrapers in New York. I remember one of the pictures I saw there. It was a skyscraper at the top of it. It was an antenna or something, but it was a tall spike. He lit it up in pink. And he should have lit it up in red because it's blood red. That's really what we're talking about in that procedure. But it's not just New York. In addition to New York, we have seven other states that are allowing abortion all the way up to birth. Alaska, Colorado, New Hampshire, New Jersey, New Mexico, Oregon, and Vermont, along with Washington, D.C., all allow women to kill their babies at any time up to full term. These are fully viable babies. They are alive, can survive independent of the mother. In half of the cases, these are not part of the mother's body. In half the cases, the child is a different sex, but they, even if they're female, like the mother, and again, half of these babies, I want to talk about women. Well, I guess there's an age at which they get concerned about women's rights, maybe, or is there? I don't know. Again, I think this pro-choice, my body, my choice, and so forth, that's a bunch of nonsense. This rhetorical gaslighting. And half of these babies that are killed are girls, but they have different DNA than the mothers do. They are individuals, and they don't want to treat them as such. Let's just take a look at what's going on in New Mexico. It's one of the states. They're going to make it even more extreme. New Mexico House of Representatives has already passed an aggressive new abortion bill that, if becomes law, will become the most extreme. Parents will not be involved in their minor daughter's abortion. Now, the reality of that, folks, is that it would allow sex traffickers, it would allow child abusers to take a pregnant minor for an abortion without any parental knowledge, without any parental involvement. One of the people opposing this measure, it's called HB 51, if you're there in New Mexico, calls it a Trojan horse backed by the National Abortion Lobby in order to establish abortion as a human right by removing so-called religious refusals for medical professionals. And it would turn every hospital, clinic, and doctor's office into an abortion clinic or a referral service. And it's not just New Mexico. We have Rhode Island, Vermont. As a matter of fact, the new governor of Rhode Island was very happy that they were going to go down the same road as New York and Virginia wanted to do. The Virginia bill, by the way, was scuttled by Northam talking about how, we'll deliver the baby, stick it over here and decide, after we resuscitate, decide if we're going to kill it or not. And then, of course, they had to come out there with a blackface to cover that up. You also had Kathy Tran was in cross-examining, admitted that it was going to allow a baby to be aborted moments before giving birth. So, fortunately, the Virginia legislature, which outside of the cities that dominate the state, the area outside of Washington, D.C., filled with Democrats, also the Virginia Beach area, they dominate that state, which would otherwise be pretty conservative. Same thing happens in New York State as well. But you have these large cities, and they were still able to table that in Virginia. When we come back, I'm going to read an op-ed piece from a congressman who has spent 30 years delivering babies. He has delivered 5,000 babies. Now, he would be, if he was still a practicing doctor, he would be forced under this New Mexico law to do an abortion.
Deceit. Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight. We're going to be talking about the wave of gun control legislation that's coming here 1 year after Parkland. But I also want to talk, and have been talking, I've got a few more things to say, about the wave of infanticide legislation that is being pushed by radical Democrats throughout the country. It's absolutely amazing to me. I read you the list of different states where it's seven other states besides New York where they're killing babies right up to birth. And more states are pushing on this. As a matter of fact, the American Center for Law and Justice, the ACLJ, is asking questions. They want to know what communications and lobbying and so forth were happening in New York as they pushed this infanticide bill. They adopted this law back in January, and the ACLJ says, we've demanded records that will show what was happening behind the scenes leading up to New York's barbaric law. What kind of pressure did the abortion lobby place on New York lawmakers? What was promised? What kind of communications were taking place between the governor's office and the New York legislators about the RHA? That's the nickname of the barbaric legislation, which, as they point out, is even worse than Communist China's policy. Communist China doesn't even allow abortion once labor begins, but New York would. Virginia would have if it hadn't been for the verbal gaffes of Northam. And, of course, they covered it up with blackface. How appropriate, as I pointed out, since the very origins of Planned Parenthood were about eugenics, targeting the black community. We've called it, rightfully, I think, black eugenics, black euthanasia, black genocide. Margaret Singer was very explicit about her contempt for black people. Planned Parenthood opened and still has the majority of their clinics in poor black neighborhoods. But, you know, that those are just coincidences, right? And it's just a coincidence that the patriarch of the Bush clan, Prescott Bush, was the first treasurer of Planned Parenthood. You can see his name proudly up there on the letterhead right there next to Margaret Singer. She was a leader. He was a treasurer. Prescott Bush. Father of George H.W. Bush. And then his grandsons, Jeb and W. As W was president and Jeb was governor, the two of them stepped aside and let a probate judge murder Terri Schiavo in Florida. Wouldn't lift a finger to help her. I mean, you know, we had to integrate schools. We had Eisenhower send in, federal personnel to integrate a school. They aren't going to do anything to override what a probate judge says to protect a woman's life. They would arrest and jail the Christians who are trying to give her a sip of water as the probate judge is killing her. See, that's the continuum, folks. You do this kind of stuff to the most innocent children among us, then it's going to not be just the beginning of life. It's going to be at the end of life as well. And so some of these radical laws that are being pushed in various states, like New Mexico, would force doctors who don't want to do abortions, it would remove their religious exemption, their ethical exemption. You know, we got Ralph Northam, who goes to medical school, and he's parading around as Coon Man or wearing a Ku Klux Klan hat, cap, hood, you know, or standing next to a guy in a Ku Klux Klan hood or whatever. I mean, that's not a joke, folks. You know, I understand that political correctness has gone too far, and I'm not out there trying to purge every aspect of jokes, but that's not a joke when you're doing it with the Ku Klux Klan in the way that he did it. But, of course, at the medical school where he goes, they don't have those kind of ethics. They don't have ethics even about protecting the life of babies. First, do no harm was supposed to be the key aspect of ethics. And so it's perfectly fine that he would do that. And, of course, then he talks about how much he loves Michael Jackson, even though he can't remember his name, even though he can't do the moonwalking and so forth. But maybe he isn't aware of the fact that Michael Jackson has been outed now multiple times by many people, even a documentary that's currently out there, as being a pedophile. I mean, even Hollywood is running from Michael Jackson, and this idiot governor of Virginia is embracing him as if he's going to somehow be his alibi for the blackface racist Ku Klux Klan pictures he's taking. And that was his alibi to distract everybody from his infanticide. Just put on that blackface and nobody will see what his agenda is. But let's listen to somebody who is a doctor with ethics. You know, Northam is a doctor, but he don't have no ethics here. But we got Roger Marshall who does. Roger Marshall is a U.S. House of Representatives, and he is, let's see, what state is he from here? I don't know. I'll look this up. But he had an op-ed piece, and I'll give you a little bit of that. But he also talked about this op-ed piece. I'll give you more details about that after the clip, but I want you to hear what he has to say as a doctor who was a physician for 30 years delivering babies, who delivered more than 5,000 babies. And here's what he has to say about this abortion issue.
Well, I think nobody in America thinks that murdering a baby just minutes before delivery is right, that this is the most barbaric law that's been written in American history. But what no one is talking about is that this is actually very, very dangerous for moms, that moms are going to die from this procedure. You know, so as an obstetrician, I've delivered thousands of babies. And if I can make one thing clear, I've never done an abortion. But as an obstetrician, I have to take care of all those complications. So the later the pregnancy is, the later the abortion is done, the greater risk there is to the mom as well.
What are some of the complications? I know you wrote that it's inhumane, it's dangerous, it's unsafe, it results in the death of many mothers. What happens to a mom's body, to a woman's body, when she delivers or has an abortion that late?
You know, the most common complications that I saw as an obstetrician is, number one, the uterus was perforated during the procedure. When that uterus gets bigger, it's much easier to perforate. But the other complication, even more common, is just hemorrhaging. So what I would typically see is a woman in the emergency room in shock, hemorrhaging from this procedure, and we would have to rush him to the emergency room, and literally we would be fishing out pieces of the baby that they left behind or pieces of the placenta, so that uterus cannot clamp down afterwards.
You write about
wow. See, they tell you it's all about women's health, right? And after Gosnell, again going back to Gosnell, you know, he was convicted of three murders, two of full-term babies and one woman who, by the way, was a immigrant of color. And she died because the ambulance people could not get to her in that clinic. That caused the state of Texas to pass a law that said that you're going to have, if you've got an abortion clinic, you're going to have hallways and doorways so that people can get somebody out of there if it's an emergency. And it also resulted and a law in Louisiana that we just had the Supreme Court rule on, which said that you're going to have the abortionist is going to have hospital procedures at a hospital that's within 30 miles. Now, both of those were overturned by the Supreme Court. And this most recent one was overturned 5-4. You say, wait a minute, I thought we had five conservatives there. You know, we got Kavanaugh, we got Gorsuch, we got Alito, we got Thomas, we got Roberts. Oh, no, wait a minute. Roberts, he can be bought. Just like he was with Obamacare. He wrote both the concurring and the dissenting opinion of for Obamacare. Now, he's really the swing guy. He's their emergency guy. He's their hedge judge. It's the way the statists hedge their bets. And so although Kavanaugh voted with the conservatives, and that makes the Democrats very angry, they're going to come after Susan Collins because she helped Kavanaugh become a justice. And even though they won 5-4, they want to come after Susan Collins because that's not enough for them. Not enough for them. And they're not about women's health, or they would be concerned that they can actually get to a hospital or that the ambulance can even get to them. But they're not. Welcome back. Let's hear more details from this op-ed piece by Representative Roger Marshall. He, by the way, is from Kansas. I couldn't remember what state he was from. But you know what, folks? We're not in Kansas anymore, as they say. We're not even in communist China. They don't even allow this kind of stuff like they're doing in New York, like they try to do in Virginia, like they're proposing to do in New Mexico. They don't even allow that in communist China. They don't kill full-term babies there. I mean, they got forced abortions. They got one-child policies that they had for a long time. They repeal that. You know, they'll haul people who are protesting their forced abortions. They had a blind guy who was protesting that. And in front of a gaggle of press, they had some goons show up there. I mean, that when they talk about what China does at the national level, it's still different in the different provinces, just like you've got, you know, different states here. They got different provinces that react differently to people. So they had one blind guy who is speaking about the forced abortions and one-child policies a few years ago. And as he's speaking to the Western press, you got these men in black, you know, black suits, black sunglasses, can't see my face type of thing. They think, well, God sees you. But they show up and they hustle off that blind guy right in front of the press, disappear him. They don't care. They don't care. We are so close to that. All the stuff that's being done in China, they're bringing here. We're going to be talking about some of the things happening on Twitter, social media, and so forth as well. But I want to get back to Representative Roger Marshall. You just heard the comments from him, but he wrote an op-ed piece that went up on Fox News as well. He said, I'm a member of the U.S. House of Representatives. I'm pro-life. But I'm more than just a politician who is reciting pro-life talking points. I'm also a physician who has delivered 5,000 babies and spent 30 years caring for expecting mothers and guiding families through pregnancy. The late-term abortion process that New York passed into law is inhumane for both the child and the mother. The further along in pregnancy, the more risk from complications come with an abortion procedure. And as you heard him in that interview that he did on Fox and Friends, he said, I've never performed an abortion, but I've had to clean up after an abortionist has harmed a woman. They bring them in with all kinds of health complications. I've got to pull body parts out of the mother, try to repair what's there. And this is what he has to say. In a late-term abortion, a mother is at higher risk for uterine perforation, for incomplete separation of the placenta, and thus for life-threatening hemorrhaging of the mother, the woman, for you Democrats out there, that can occur, potentially resulting in the death of many mothers. Late-term abortions also have a high risk of permanent scarring, the possibility of infection of the uterus and surrounding organs, which often leads to infertility. Point blank, late-term abortions are unsafe and are more dangerous than naturally occurring childbirth in almost any situation. Throughout my 30 years and thousands of deliveries, writes Representative Roger Marshall, again, a physician as well as a congressman, he said, every pregnancy that he's seen over 30 years was different, and every situation had its challenges, every single one. No mother goes through pregnancy without some physical, emotional, financial, or medical trials. Contrary to the pro-abortion movement, regardless of the underlying medical health, I've never seen the scenario where we had to choose between a mother's life and a baby. And you know what? That's the same thing that C. Everett Koop, who also worked for over 30 years delivering babies, he also said that. He was, if you remember, he was the Surgeon General for Ronald Reagan. He said, I, in all of my 30 years, have never seen a situation where we had to choose between the life of a mother and the life of a baby. That is a canard. It is a lie. It is part of the gaslighting of these eugenicists who see abortion not as a right, R-I-G-H-T, but as a right, R-I-T-E. It is a religious right, ritual to them, a satanic ritual that they celebrate. That's what they were doing here in Austin. We had Abortion Barbie do her filibuster against a bill that would mandate that they actually have to take procedures to protect the health and the life of the mother after we saw a woman who was a immigrant of color die in Gosnell's care because they couldn't get the emergency personnel, could not get her out of there to get her somewhere where she could be treated because of what he had done. As I said here in Texas, well, if you're about women's health, and we are all about women's health, even young women, if you're about that, let's make sure that they have adequate facilities. And they did Wendy Davis, who became their candidate for governor here, got shellacked by Governor Abbott. So glad to see that. But she was out there, you know, pushing back against that. And we had people out in front of the building as they were debating that here in Austin, shouting "Hail Satan" to the pro-life protesters who are out there singing "Amazing Grace." And pretty clear which side everybody's on, isn't it? Anyway, he said, go back to the representative, the physician who worked for 30 years, delivered over 5,000 babies, is now a congressman. He said, in both the New York and the proposed Virginia bills, mental health is listed as a reason to allow for late-term and partial birth abortion if the mother is experiencing mental or emotional distress. First of all, he said, pregnancy triggers some kind of emotional distress in almost every patient, both during the pregnancy, and then, of course, you have things like postpartum depression that happens frequently. He knows this. He's seen this 5,000 times. Anyway, he says, but more importantly, I also served as an objen to a state mental health hospital and prison where I would see moms who are struggling with the worst of untreated mental health issues. To this day, I can't think of a single scenario where I thought a late-term abortion would improve a woman's health. You know, but don't believe him. He's only had 30 years experience and delivered 5,000 babies, right? Would you believe this if this was a government-funded study that, you know, looked at, let's say, you know, a couple hundred people or something? But this is a guy who conducted his experience, his experiments, if you will, his study, just call it a study, 30-year study, 5,000 data points. Oh, but you won't believe that, will you? He said, I knew as a medical student from the moment I heard my firstborn daughter, Lauren, cry, that I wanted to bring life into this world. Nothing, he writes, has brought me more repeated joy than to hand a crying newborn baby to his or her mother. This is the kind of doctor, unlike Ralph Northam, this is the kind of doctor that they would force in New Mexico under that bill. They would force him to do an abortion or to quit delivering babies. The kind of doctor who says that he gets joy from handing a crying newborn to the mother. That's the kind of people that will be excluded from medical practice while we have the scum like Northam put in place.
Decoding the mainstream propaganda. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
Love electricity, shockwave, sensual power on the motherboard, yes. Push up, overload, legendary, heavy glow, sunshine, thunder roll, keep this on. Yes, the lantern burn for a man easy and broadcast.
Welcome back. Yeah, we are 1 year after the horrible shooting in Parkland, Florida, Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. We have NPR, PBS, and Maris did a poll to take the pulse of the public. Are people ready to do gun control now? And, of course, we have had a lot of movement towards gun control, and we're going to talk about that. And yet, even NPR is saying, well, you know, the urgency for new gun restrictions has declined in the last year. That's what they found from their poll. They said that immediately in the aftermath of the shooting that killed 17 people on Valentine's Day last year, 71% of Americans said that laws covering the sale of firearms should be stricter. It was 71% the day after. Now, a year after, it's 51%. So that's one of the reasons why we protect individual liberty with a Bill of Rights. It's one of the reasons why we don't have direct democracy and referenda, because the people can easily be swayed by one thing and not, they need to take time to digest the information and to think about what is really happening here. They said when it comes to whether stricter gun legislation should be an immediate priority for Congress, now only 42% say that it should be. In April of 2018, it was 10 points higher. They had more than 50%. Now they don't. Now it's 60-40. Against more legislation. Nevertheless, understand that the Democrats are still pushing for that, and we have had Republicans jump in on these red flag gun confiscation laws that have already cost the lives of some people. where you can be identified by anybody who is disgruntled, you know, anybody who doesn't like you. You have an angry ex-wife who wants to say that you're crazy. They can basically SWAT team you. And that's how that one guy got killed. And it's a very, very scary situation. And it shows what happens when you have the Republican Party and the NRA decide that they're going to play along. This is not a hill we want to die on. Well, every hill is a hill to fight for when it comes to individual liberty. There aren't any liberties that I'm willing to exchange to kind of get along with the other people, to compromise on. It's that kind of thinking that lets the other side win, because they never quit. They never stop. They keep coming and coming and coming. And that's why our freedoms are being lost as we ratchet up an authoritarian, tyrannical government that doesn't care about individual liberties. It is like a ratchet. You know, a ratchet only turns one way. It doesn't turn back the other way. We don't have Republicans who ever push back and say, well, I want to go back to freedom on this issue. They just say, well, no more of that. Don't turn that crank handle again. But they won't turn it back. That's why I say I'm not a conservative. I am not a conservative. Conservatives want to maintain the status quo. It doesn't matter that 10 years ago they would have defined this status quo as unacceptable intrusions on individual liberties. Now they accept it. It's okay. No problem. They said a solid majority, 59%, say their first reaction when hearing about a mass shooting is that the country needs stricter gun laws. But then they think about it, and then they realize, no, that's not really going to solve the problem. They said only a quarter say that when they hear about a shooting, their first thought is that more people need to carry a gun. I don't know that that poll is true, because we see, contrary to what the mainstream press and NPR and PBS would like us to think, whenever there is a shooting, you always see gun sales go up. Because people look at this situation and they say, I need to be able to protect myself, because the police are not always on the scene of the crime. And honest police officers will tell you that. Sheriff David Clark, he said, when I was in the big city, I was for gun control. And then I went to Maine and everybody there had guns. And I realized that we can't be everywhere that we need to be. And so then when he became sheriff there in Minnesota, he said to the people, he said, look, we're going to do what we can to protect you, and we're going to try to get there as quickly as we can, and we're going to try to catch those people, but there's necessarily going to be an amount of time before we can get there. So what I'm telling you as sheriff is that you need to buy a gun and make sure that you know how to use it safely. Get your training, but also get a gun, and we'll get there as soon as we can to help you. But a lot of things can happen in a couple of minutes or 5 minutes or 8 minutes or whatever it takes people to get there. I mean, even getting in there in 8 minutes, I mean, that's pretty good response time. But that is an eternity if you don't have a gun and the other guy is shooting everybody in sight. Democrats are very open to a federal gun registry. Democrat House Caucus Chairman Hakeem Jeffries defended his party's push for a universal background check bill yesterday. He claimed that any enforcement of the legislation would be left to the Department of Justice to decide. So we don't have to worry about this. We've got a bureaucracy who's just going to make it up. That's what government, that's what Congress has been doing for a very long time. They don't consider laws and they don't do their duty. They push it off to the bureaucracy. And then that way they have plausible deniability, which is what he's doing before the fact in this particular case. Saying, well, I'm going to let them decide what they're going to do. And, if they abuse it, then maybe we'll come in and do something about it at that point in time. They always do that. And then as you had Louis Gohmert here of Texas said, well, how would this be enforced? If somebody obtains a gun without getting a background check, it seemed like it's not going to come to light until after the gun is used. Oh, well, they've thought of that. They want to have a federal registry for everything. Louisiana Representative Cedric Richmond said, well, the truth of the matter is the gun's registered to somebody. So if somebody wanted to violate the law, then it's on them. But to detect that they violated the law when a new person either registers it or is caught in the possession of it, the question will become, how did they get the gun? And if they say they purchased it. And so he said he'd like to see a mandatory federal gun registry. I wouldn't mind seeing a gun registry. I really wouldn't. I think I filed a bill when I was in the Louisiana legislature. I think I filed a registry. I think I filed ballistic fingerprints, something like that. I don't know. Maybe we can get their DNA or something like that. I don't know, you know. Don't worry about individual liberty. That's not even a question here anywhere. And so, you know, it's these gun people. People with guns are the problem, right? No, actually, Free Thought Project points out that if you actually look at the data, concealed carry permit holders break the law far less than the police. Oh, who would have thought? Gun statistics across the country found that concealed carry permit holders break the law far less than police officers, reports Free Thought Project. They said the number of Americans licensed to carry a concealed weapon is now 17 million, a 273% increase since 2007. What was it that caused those to go up by, to triple, essentially? Oh, that was Barack Obama, the best gun salesman we've ever had. But let's take a look at the data. And this is from John Lott. They looked at full-time police officers. There's 685,000 of them. You know, we've got an army, a standing army here in America that is bigger than most of the militaries outside of the American military. Most countries don't have a military that big. So, yeah, that's a standing army standing on you. Anyway, 685,000 full-time police officers, they commit, on average, they committed 103 crimes per 100,000 officers. So look at the number of crimes per 100,000. For the police, it's 103. What is it for the U.S. population? 37 times higher than that. So the police officers are a lot safer than the general population. 103 crimes per police officer versus 3,800 crimes per 100,000 of the general population. However, the people who get concealed carry are one-tenth the number of crimes per 100,000 as the police. So the police are 100, and so the general population, 3,800 crimes per 100,000. The police, 103 crimes per 100,000. For concealed permit carries, their crime rate is 10 per 100,000. 10. One-tenth of the police. The police are 10 times more criminal than the concealed carry permit holders. How about that? But let's take the guns away from them and let only the police have the guns. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I want to finish up on the state of gun control here 1 year after Parkland. I'm not going to have time today to get to the new OPEC, which is going to be focused and is being focused around gas, not gasoline, natural gas, not petroleum. That is, I think, the background, the overall structure of why we see the plot of the globalists. They are very good at what they do, aren't they? And they have these long-term plans. They're multifaceted. They don't just go with one attack. It's a multi-pronged attack. And these things all focus together. When we look at this green socialism, what an oxymoron that is. No, it's red, folks. It's red. It's communist, it's socialist, it's authoritarian, it's austerity. But they have to have a global problem for global government. They will then enact a global tax and so forth. But it's also a way of controlling our energy, because that's the way that you control people. You can destroy them economically. You can destroy their lives. You can destroy the quality of our lives. You can destroy the life expectancy of people by coming after energy. It's actually ultimately in the long term, and they've understood this for a while. They've actually talked about this. We've explained this to you in the past. We'll take a look at it again tomorrow. But they are ultimately, it's a more powerful weapon to control energy than it is to control the money supply. The money supply is just, the way that you get energy, quite frankly. Because once you got energy, then you can have food and all these other things. It's all contingent on affordable energy. That's why this is the crux of the matter. That's why we talk so much about the UN, the globalist agenda, for 2030, the UN 2030 agenda for sustainability that will give us the smart cities, that will take away our mobility. And Occasional Cortex did us all a favor here in America. Just like Emmanuel Macron did in France. He showed people where this is headed. Stepped it up. Boiled the frogs a little bit too quickly. All right, I'm going to finish up with what's going on with gun prohibition. Before I do, real quickly, I want to tell you about some of the products that we have at InfoWarsStore.com. That's the way we fund our program here. And if you want us to continue as the point man in this fight for free speech, this fight against globalism, free speech is not free, folks. There is a price involved in that. You have to support the free press, or you're going to lose your free speech completely on social media as well. Your ability to be able to hear and see an alternative point of view, to decide for yourself, to be able to share that information, that's the stuff that they want to take away from you. You can stop that from being taken away by supporting the free press, by supporting InfoWars. We've got a lot of products at InfoWarsLife.com. We've got Ultimate Bone Broth, 50% off. And, of course, that's ancient super nutrients combined with modern technology. Ultimate Bone Broth, you can get that for 50% off at InfoWarsStore.com. We still have the special for limited time, Brain Force Plus, 50% off in combination with Turbo Force. You can find that there as well, the Brain Synergy Combo. And it's Valentine's Day. We got a new product that's a food product as well as a energy product, but it's almost like candy. It's delicious the way it tastes. We've got chocolate peanut butter and also vanilla coconut. These are protein bars, however. It doesn't just taste good. It's natural protein, and it's packed with fiber. These are the new InfoWars Life protein bars. Alex just rolled these out yesterday. I've had the chocolate peanut butter. Tastes great. It's chocolate on the inside, peanut butter on the outside. Different than you usually see, more of a skew, I would say, towards the chocolate. But it tastes great. It's not like the typical tasteless protein bars that I've typically had. This is great tasting. It's hard to believe that it's as good as it is. For you, 240 calories, 15 grams of protein, and you can save 40% off right now as part of the introductory price, 40% off if you get two boxes. And again, it comes in two different flavors, vanilla coconut or chocolate peanut butter. The InfoWars Life protein bars, you'll see them now at InfoWarsStore.com. All right, the attack has really been stepped up over the last year. As Free Thought Project point out, unprecedented gun confiscation is hitting the United States as thousands of citizens have their guns seized from them for no reason at all. That's called the extreme protection orders, the red flag gun laws is a better way to put it. And, you know, it should be a red flag to you because anybody can put this out there. I got to say, it was a week ago that my wife had a reaction to pain medication after an operation. One of the things that happened after the operation, I kind of laughed about it, but it affected her thinking and her mood, and I understood she just had an operation. I'm not surprised by that. She got very upset with me and started yelling and screaming at me, and I did everything I could to keep from laughing at her because I was thinking, this is the first time I've seen you act like many of the wives that my friends unfortunately married. I've really been blessed not to have a wife that has gone nuts on me. Karen has just been great all these years. And yet, it just takes somebody like who is like that in real life to call up the police and say, go after this guy, and basically SWAT team their ex-husband. And that's what these red flag laws are doing. 9 states have passed laws over the past year, bringing the total to 14. It allows police or household members to seek court orders to have the police go to your house and grab your guns. An unprecedented 1,700 orders to seize guns were issued in 2018. And remember, folks, that we have the people who are typically there protecting our right to defend ourselves, our God-given right to defend ourselves, protected by the Second Amendment. That basically caved on this because they didn't want to go into that fight. As they point out, Free Thought Project said, to those who may be in favor of such laws, consider the following. There is no way to stop an estranged spouse from calling police repeatedly and telling them that their ex is threatening to cause harm to others. And as I said before, if somebody, I don't have a problem with taking action against dangerous people. But let's make sure that we have due process. Let's look at the way that we are doing this. And when we're looking at somebody who is dangerous, is showing up swatting them at their house and taking away their firearms, is that really the solution? Because that person can now still go out and get a knife, get a hammer, get a rope. They can take their car or truck and ram, you know, drive it over somebody. I mean, the person is dangerous, not the firearm. This is, again, the whole fantasy that is sold to us by the hypocrites in Hollywood, the actors who pretend to be something that they aren't. And they tell us that it's the gun that is dangerous, not the person. No, the person is the one who's dangerous. We have in Washington State, I just reported, they've just passed a law. And we got a lot of sheriffs in Washington State say, I'm not going to enforce that law. I swore an oath to the Constitution. Same thing is starting to happen in New Mexico. So many laws are being passed by the Democrats to take our weapons that you now fortunately have sheriffs who are elected, unlike police chiefs who are appointed and are essentially politicians. The sheriffs are better because they are elected. That was the original design. New Mexico's got a new governor, and now they've got new gun laws. They replaced the pro-gun Republican Susana Martinez with a anti-gun Democrat, Michelle Grisham. She took office January 1st, and she's got a list of things that she wanted. The NRA was warning people she's going to be coming for the guns. And now you've got New Mexico sheriffs, just like the sheriffs in Washington State, saying we're not going to enforce unconstitutional gun control bills. But in L.A., you've got the city council there demanding that anybody who is a city contractor will have to disclose if they have ties to the NRA. This is the kind of way, and as Reason points out, this is going to violate the First Amendment because it's going to deter association with an advocacy group. Oh, the Democrats don't care about that. I mean, they are going after judicial nominees, over and over again, asking them about their religious affiliation. Do you, are you, or have you ever been a member of a Christian organization? Well, then you're disqualified because you might have objections to ripping babies apart. Yeah, Kamala Harris has the audacity. Oh, we're ripping babies away from the parents at the border. Yeah, you favor ripping babies out of the mothers and ripping them to pieces. And it's not just looking at their association with the NRA. Of course, we've got New York and other places where they're trying to put pressure, trying to use banks to stop doing business with retailers or with gun manufacturers. Social media is where they're coming after guns as well, right? You've got proposals in New York back in November said, oh, you only want you to turn over your social media history and your passwords. Well, now they've got a bill that's going through Illinois doing the same thing. Want to know, what have you said? You know, what have you done? You know, there was, we've got time. We'll revisit this tomorrow. We'll talk about metadata and about geospatial intelligence, activity-based intelligence. That's where the real danger is.